You've had one term?
I have had, yes, yes.
Okay.
So coming to the end of my first triennium.
Yep. And obviously you want to come back. I mean, we've just had a conversation off the air about how we're going to talk about this interview because there's things to talk about. Let's go with the controversial stuff first to get that out of the way.
Well, how about before we get into things, I would just like to set the record straight on on one particular area, because I know that it's something that is near and dear to this community.
Yeah.
And that was with regards to a funding decision that was made back in July 2020.
Yes.
With regards to Erosha and their fantastic work that they do out on Karioi.
Yeah, the Karioi project.
Yeah. So back in July 2020, there was a funding application that was heard by the then Community Restoration Committee. I was a member of that committee, and Councillor Lichwark was the chair of the committee at that time.
Yeah.
And Erosha had put forward a funding application to our Natural Heritage Fund. Now, there was some concern at that time when that funding application was heard that there was insufficient funds in the Natural Heritage Fund to fully support the project.
Yeah.
Now, as a member of the committee at the time, I really pushed the committee to take the time to fully consider what were our options that would enable us to fully support Erosha in that. However, Councillor Lichwark, who was the chair at that time, chose to push through a motion that funded them at 50%. And while I would have loved to have seen the committee take the full opportunity to explore our options, once the chair puts through a motion, unfortunately, that then is the decision of the committee. And so I would have loved to have seen us have the opportunity to see the great work that they have done and are accomplishing out there, fully supported. I feel as though there might have been a little misinformation that's been going on.
So this was discussed in the interview with Fred earlier this week.
And that is publicly minuted, so it's on the website.
So you're saying you wanted to have more discussion before making a decision
And explore the options. There's always, whenever we have funds available, inevitably they are
oversubscribed.
Yes,
I know. Because I'm, as someone who applies for funds, I completely. Yeah, I know that. That's always the case.
So you do find yourself in challenging decision making processes, and I just wanted to make sure we took the time, but unfortunately, once the chair puts through a motion to fund at 50%,
that's the decision.
Okay.
So the Karioi project should apply again, presumably, in the future. They'd be most welcome.
Absolutely.
Okay. So unfortunately, all our regional council interviews are getting a little bit diverted by having to talk about the stuff that's gone to the national media.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's kind of looked like a Russ Romington versus Fred Lichwark thing. But you're kind of been dragged into, well, everyone's dragged into it. So you were one person who voted to retain Russ Remington as the chair, and some people might criticise that. Well, some people have criticised that, as we know, because we had Fred's interview the other day. Do you want? Just have your say about that. Why you made that decision?
I suppose the comment I would make about that is that that came before council in May, so that came before council 5 months out from an election. And I'd love the opportunity later in this interview to talk about the various decisions that are in front of council. There are significant decisions we're trying to make outside of the politics of council, right? And I feel that that's where our energy and our resources should be going towards. And so I was not supportive of a fundamental change in leadership of regional council 5 months out of an election campaign. I felt that our energy and our resources should be going into the work that was ahead of council itself. So I certainly didn't support that change.
Okay. Does that imply that you support Russ Remington in all things, I guess, is a question people might be wondering. I know you're smart. It's a silly question, but let's put it on the table and just answer it. So,
no, that my in voting against that motion, yeah. that was me saying, as a council, we need to be focusing on the work in front of us,
yeah.
and not get distracting the staff, utilizing resources, and preventing really fundamental projects that were on the go from being completed because of a distraction. That wasn't something I was going to support. And it's unfortunate because whenever you have a change in leadership of an organization, it is inherently disruptive, right? And it distracts people. For instance, one of the key pieces of work that we've been undertaking through the Strategy and Policy Committee, which is the committee I chair, has been the coastal plan. And that was on track to be wrapped up in this triennium, but unfortunately, because of all of the distraction, that's not going to happen until the next triennium. And so that's unfortunate, because the coastal plan is something that hadn't been reviewed in over 20 years. It's a critical piece of work, and I would have loved to have seen our time, energy, and resources go into delivering that piece of work as opposed to as opposed to the other.
Do you have thoughts about the whole Three Waters debate, or do we just say that's kind of irrelevant to regional council, since regional council doesn't run the Three Waters?
Right. Well, I think that regional council does have an official position on that. That was decided back in September.
Oh, okay.
September of last year, and really that focused around the consultation and the communication conversations that we were having, that central government really was having with our communities. Because anytime you're looking at a shift in, let's say, a fundamental shift in the way we organize or do things or manage our assets or our resources, I think that those are conversations we need to have transparently and with integrity with our communities, so that we can all go on that transition, right? And so the official position of regional council that was supported by councillors was that those conversations needed to happen.
So,
but in terms of regional council's role now, at that time we didn't have a decision from cabinet with regards to our flood infrastructure, our drainage infrastructure, and whether or not that was going to be considered part of the stormwater aspect of Three Waters. That cabinet decision has been made, and it's been deemed to be external to the Three Waters issue. So yeah, at this stage, Three Waters has very little to do with regional council.
Okay. So what the regional council's actual position was, slow down?
Yeah. Well, slow down in terms of let's have a thorough, informed debate with all of our communities, so that everybody is across the proposal, so that they fully understand it and they understand what it's going to mean for them.
Okay, all right.
But like I say, after the cabinet decision, and that came subsequent to that September position of regional council, that's further extricated the assets that regional council is responsible for: the flood infrastructure, the drainage network. That has set that outside of that Three Waters process.
Okay, all right. The other issue we have to talk about is Fred Litchwark said that there's problems with you two working together. Do you want to comment on that?
I suppose that the only comment that I would make is that I can work with anyone, Aaron. But I think that in any organization, there's a standard of behavior. There's a standard of behavior that should be able to be expected. And particularly a standard of behavior that should be role modeled from anyone in a leadership position, anyone in a governance position. And when behavior isn't aligned with that standard that has been agreed and set by an organization, then people need to be held to account. And I suppose as far as going forward, I can work with anyone, but I absolutely will be someone that if I see behavior that is bullying or harassment or threatening behavior, then I'm going to call that out. And that's whether that was directed at a staff member or a member of public or a fellow counselor. I'm certainly going to call that out, regardless of who's okay. involved.
And I guess we can say that Fred was held to account because he got stood down from certain aspects of the role, which I don't understand all the details, but things did happen. Okay, is there anything else you want to say?
I think we should focus on the great work that has come out of council over the last 3 years, and what I've certainly been excited and happy to be a part of.
I also like to just I like the candidates just to say a little bit about themselves. Normally we do that at the start, so we'll call this the start, and. Just a little bit about yourself so people know your background, I guess.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, if you haven't picked up on the accent, I'm not not originally from New Zealand, from the U.S. in Seattle.
Yeah.
But have lived in New Zealand and here in the Waikato for the last 26 years, actually. Sorry. Yeah.
No, that's all right.
Yeah, so I have lived here for the last 26 years. I'm a dairy farmer in Tihoe, which is...
Yeah. Near Orini?
Yes. Yes.
North of Hamilton, folks.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And am a absolute proud dairy farmer and food producer here in the Waikato. But I also have been involved in a number of other... organizations and things. I used to work for Well Networks many years ago. Actually, when I was driving out here this morning, it always gives me great pleasure to drive past the wind farm because I actually did the original landowners agreement. My background is actually electrical engineering. So,
Okay, all right. So. I'm trying to like mesh all
that
together.
Put it all together. I know.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I also have been involved in a number of nonprofits.
Such as?
Originally the Huntley Energy Efficiency Trust. So I was the executive chair of that, and we insulated over 7,000 low-income homes across the Waikato region. And more recently, I was chair of GoEco for 10 years. So that's an environmental organization based out of Hamilton, but really proud to have delivered Kaivolution, the first food rescue service here in the Waikato region.
Yeah, I think they were coming out here at one point. All sorts of things changed after the virus arrived. Projects like that.
Yeah.
So you've been involved with some environmental projects, but also with farming. I say but. that's what happens in most people's heads, I think, in this country at the moment.
And I think
do you want to address that too?
That's unfortunate. I think that it's unfortunate that it seems you're either a farmer or you're an environmentalist. And I guess I don't see that dichotomy being that way. And I think we're seeing more and more of that in our society where we say you're either this or you're that. And I don't see them as mutually exclusive at all. On our dairy farm in Tihoe, we have put tremendous effort into environmental initiatives. Since we've been involved in dairy farming, my husband is a fourth generation dairy farmer, and so we've certainly put considerable time, energy, and capital into that. We've retired over 10 hectares of land that was on a erosion-prone slope.
Yeah.
We've planted that out, and that's just about minimizing the flow of sediment into fresh water. We're in the middle of a project where we're retiring a further 3 hectares along Mangatea Stream and planting that out and turning it into a beautiful natural corridor up into the bush. I was asked recently, you know, what's your favorite part of the Waikato? And I have to say it's my farm.
It's your place.
Just the other day I was looking out and multiple pairs, mated pairs of kereru, flying around, and the noise of the tui was deafening, and it's a beautiful place, and so
you've got a bit of riparian management going on.
Absolutely. Oh well, yeah. we did our first farm environmental plan back in 2015, and that was really about allowing us to take stock of what we had done and also to plan ahead as to what further steps we wanted to. All of our streams have been fenced off and planted up for quite some time, and most of the farmers that I'm involved with go to great lengths to do the right thing by the environment. Mm. I think that you know, when you consider fantastic farmers like Stu Muir up in Akaaka, what he's been able to accomplish, and Chris Falconer in Wairanga, doing brilliant work, both as food producers of healthy, nutritious food, but also ensuring that they're looking after the land that they are, you know.
So we had a plan change in the last few years about riparian management and fencing off streams, and the version I've heard was that conservative forces, I guess, got the fencing position of what the distance between the stream and the fence narrowed down to a point where it was too small. Is that
So I think the plan you're referring to is plan change one.
Yes.
So that is currently before the courts. And so I don't want to go into too much detail.
Oh, yeah, you guys,
because a matter before the courts.
You won't talk to me when it's before the courts. I know.
Yeah. But what I would say is that I know that considerable time, energy, and resource has gone into getting Plan Change 1 to where it is at this point. Following on from Plan Change 1, we've seen the National Policy Statement for Fresh Water and the National Environmental Standards for Fresh Water come out. And interestingly enough, there was significant modeling in those National Policy Statement, National Environmental Standards, that was taken from the work that came out of Plan Change 1. And so in some respects, the Waikato and Waipa catchments are ahead of what is now our obligation to deliver across the entire region with regards to fresh water.
So from my understanding is that the fences there needs to be more space so you can get proper growth of proper riparian management. Is that where we're going?
Oh, certainly.
Are you even allowed to say that's what you want to see?
Well, that is what is spelled out in the National Policy Statement for fresh water now. So those distances are articulated within that National Policy Statement. Once a National Policy Statement is in place, regional councils are obligated to give effect to those. Oh,
so is there any need to go to court on it then?
Well, it is in the middle of a process.
Okay, so it's just there.
So
yeah.
It's, yeah.
Who sent it to the environment? You said environment court?
So once the plan was notified, that was, I want to say that was March of 2020.
Yeah.
Then there were appeals filed in front of the court.
Who?
Oh, there's a variety of
interested parties, we'll
yeah,
call them? Okay.
Yeah.
It feels like that most farmers want to do the right thing, that there's a conservative element within farming that doesn't, and that the conservative element holds quite a bit of power. Federated farmers from outside appear to be like an activist group out there organizing protests against the Labor government in general and things like that.
I think Aaron, there's a number of groups out there, and we don't want to confuse one with the other. In terms of farmers' willingness to engage, from my perspective and what I see, I mean, I've been a part of the Dairy Environmental Leaders Forum for a number of years, and that is a group of farmers who take an active role in this space and encourage other farmers to engage as well. I think in any industry there is the spectrum, right? And there's in any industry there's going to be those who may have practices that we may not be in favor of. And we should absolutely do whatever is within our power to hold those people to account if their actions are contrary to what our communities and what our industry wants to see, right? But like I say, you're going to get that spectrum in any industry. The vast majority of farmers that I interact with are actively engaged in the environmental space and are taking the steps to really respond to not only what our local communities are asking of us as food producers, so that we have our license to farm, but also in response to what our overseas markets are asking for. Mm. You know, what consumers are asking for.
Is it from the other side of things, are farmers being or going to be asked, or are they being asked to do more than they can financially handle?
I think
in terms of making changes,
I think that it's the cumulative effect that's creating some tension. So it's not because of course we're not just looking at changes around the distance of fencing and things like that, right? It's much broader than that. And I think that...
Well, that's just one issue.
It is. Yeah. It is. Yeah. And I think that farmers, alongside a number of industries, alongside local government, is facing an absolute avalanche of regulatory reform. And whenever we have multiple levels of reform across really fundamental issues, it can create lots of anxiety and tension and can really challenge our ability to not only process that change and bring it into effect in our businesses, but can at times challenge us financially. Mm-hmm. I think that it's been interesting. I think when you look back on farming and how it's transitioned, how a much smaller farm, like in terms of my in-laws when they were farming, a much smaller farm supported many more families and many more employees and many more individuals. And there's been a real transition in that. And you have fewer people working in a farming business and yet trying to cover all of the regulations, all of the legal requirements. It can be resource intense. And I think that with any change process, whether it's in farming or any other change process that we're going through as a society and as a community, that we need to be cognizant of the speed at which we're asking people to make those changes. And I know everybody wants change overnight.
Well, the contradiction is that climate change scientists are demanding that, or stating that it has to happen quickly. My belief is that if it is really this big a deal, then the government should be funding farmers to do it regardless. And a lot of people would be like, well, they make their own profits, and but I'm just like, if it is this big a deal, it doesn't matter how it happens, it just has to happen.
Well, and let's expand that even beyond farming, Aaron, right? Because if immediate change is what we're asking, not just from agriculture and food producers, but also in terms of how, let's say, our coastal communities are dealing with inundation, we've got some significant issues that are going to take significant resources in order to make the shift in a timely manner. If as a society, if that is the shift we want and that is the pace of change we want, then I do believe that there's a role for central government in supporting that shift.
So with regional council, I'm getting the story that we've got environmentalists versus farmers. I don't want to say it like that, just the voting breakdown on the regional council is too conservative to do what we need to do to deal with environmental issues. You got any comments about that? I don't really know. I don't have a lot of details to present as evidence. I'm just getting that perception. So, yeah, a comment, I guess.
I don't think that that you could classify all councillors in those sort of simplistic terms.
I'm aware it's simplistic, yeah.
Yeah. I think that, you know, as with any of the decisions that are made around the regional council table, you've got councillors that represent a variety of communities of interest, right? I mean, the regional council covers an enormous area, and the councillors will, you know, that sit around that table will have a variety of views, and those are informed by the communities that they represent. And collectively, we try and make the best decisions for the entire region. And there's always going to be differences of opinions. That's the nature of politics. I think that how we get good decisions is if we have good, robust debate.
But do you think we need to be moving faster?
Do I think we need to be moving faster in terms
to deal with environmental issues and climate change?
Right. I think that, it depends on what it is, what the decision is that you want to consider moving faster on. Like, okay. For instance, if you want to think of it in terms of say adaptation, you know, should we be moving faster and having constructive conversations with our communities about what that looks like and what that means and what their appetite for shift is? I think that those are important conversations to have. Because I don't necessarily believe that 14 councillors are the best ones to dictate to the community. I think that 14 councillors need to encourage the processes that allow the conversations to be had. So one of the things that we've been doing through the Strategy and Policy Committee over the last 3 years.
This is the one you're the chair of?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yep.
Is the development of a sustainable infrastructure decision-making framework. Because the reality is regional council has significant structures out there, flood infrastructure in particular, that with climate change is going to be challenged.
So right. We're talking about the low-lying areas, particularly in the Hauraki Plains area, but also, I understand, around the Port Waikato area as well.
Well, any of the communities that are currently being protected by flood banks, flood infrastructure, if we are looking at how do we maintain those structures going forward in the face of climate change, we're looking at significant investment decisions, right? And so with the development of the Sustainable Infrastructure Decision-Making Framework, that's around being able to look at an investment decision and saying, okay, if we're going to adapt this flood bank, let's say, to rising sea levels or greater storm activity, this is what that's going to take capital-wise. Let's consider that alongside the economic activity that protects. Let's consider that alongside the cultural implications, whether it's protecting a place of significance. And also let's consider it in terms of impact on community. So much of our flood infrastructure is not just protecting productive land.
Yeah.
It's also protecting significant communities, you know, rest homes, schools, you know, places where people live.
And so it's complex. I'm Pamela, I'm mindful that we've got our next interviews here now. And it's incredibly detailed stuff.
Yes, it is.
And it's none of it simple. Just before we go, I guess, because we haven't talked about, I usually like to talk about what you've done in the last 3 years or what you want to continue doing. Can you kind of quickly list some things that you've been involved with over the last 3 years?
Absolutely. As the chair of strategy and policy, one of the things that we do through that committee is submission processes. And as we were talking about earlier, that councils right now, communities, are faced with an avalanche of regulatory change. And in the face of that, it's really important that the Waikato perspective of those proposals is being conveyed in the Wellington space. And so as the chair of strategy and policy, I have led the council through 122 submission processes,
right.
65 of those to central government alone. And so I feel very proud of the way that I have led the council through ensuring that the Waikato perspective is shared clearly and articulately with central government. I've also been able to represent the region twice in front of select committee to ensure that the impact of these proposals on the Waikato region itself is clearly conveyed. And I think that that's really important. And that's something that I would love to see continue on. And I suppose alongside that, there's some considerable pieces of work that have come through Strat and Paul, including the coastal plan, the regional pest management plan, the regional biodiversity strategy, the sustainable infrastructure decision-making framework, water security strategy. There's been significant work. Doesn't always make the headlines funny.
Council is very rarely in the headlines except the stuff we've talked about at the start of the interview.
And that's unfortunate because the decisions are significant and they affect every single one of us on a daily basis.
And I think every single regional councillor would agree with you about that, that I've had those conversations. Yeah. Well, thank you for coming in, Pamela, and being patient with us.
Absolutely.
And going out and looking out the door for me earlier while we
were
off the air.
My pleasure.
Good luck with your campaign.